The reading today is from Matthew 10, verses 34 to 42. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of those little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward.
Thank you, Bob. Jesus is speaking these words, these tough words, to his disciples as he is sending them out on their way to proclaim his message. As he is sending them out on their way, afraid. Now you can read this reading and come away with an idea that Jesus is going to cause some conflict. But we need to dig deeper. I'll start with a question. Do you believe in God? Do you believe in a loving, caring, plugged-in God? That is first and foremost the most important question to ask. Now, we don't ask that often in church, and it's really a shame that we don't. Because in truth, there are a lot of people in church who believe in themselves, believe in their jobs, believe in their lives, but are afraid to honestly approach this thought of a supreme being. To honestly pull up the doubt they feel in their hearts and examine it. And Jesus is not saying, go make trouble with your dad. Go yell at your daughter. No. Jesus is asking all of them to ask themselves, who's on first? You know, when you step on an airplane, you get on an airplane, you sit down in your seat, the stewardess goes through that whole spiel, you know, the one you ignore while you're looking through the in-flight magazine? Exits, okay, there and there. All right. And what she says is, for those of you traveling with small children, in the unlikely event of failure of cabin pressure, don't you love that? Oxygen masks will drop down in front of you, right? And what'd she say? Put the mask on your own face first and then turn to help those you are traveling with. It's a good point, because you only have so much time in which to function without oxygen. And then after that, you're good for nothing, right? You're good for nothing after that. So as basic a need as oxygen, you better make sure that need is filled for you before you turn around to help somebody else. Basic logic, nothing selfish about it. Get their mask too. They can wait another 4 or 5 seconds before they get theirs on. Just make sure you got yours strapped on so then you can help another person. Just make sure that you're ready to go to help that other person. And what Jesus is saying here is the same thing. Jesus is saying, you make sure your lifeline is attached and functioning with no obstacles, no obstructions in that tube. You make sure your loyalty is first and foremost, numero uno, to to your God. You make sure your relationship with your God is front and center and strong before you try to help anybody else. Before you do anything else, make sure you're plugged in and ready to go. Now, he's sending them out there into the world. People can be very obnoxious. You may have learned that in your own life. People can be convoluted and confounding. And if you're out there representing Christ, you better be ready for it. People you love may disappoint you. You better be ready for it. People you don't even know may abuse you. You better be ready for it. That's what Jesus is saying. Who's on first? It's got to be God. If you believe in a loving, caring, powerful God, what relationship takes precedence for you before that? I love my wife and my kids more than anything in the world. But the reason I'm able to do that is because of my relationship with my God. The reason I'm able not to do this when he upsets me is because I don't generate my own love. That love is poured into me to share. Now, they always say on the anti-abuse commercials, which I always run in 3 a.m, which is the right time to run them, before you pick up your baby, get a hold of yourself, right? Let's expand that. Before you pick up anybody, get a hold of yourself. Before a word comes out of your mouth, be plugged into your God. That's what Jesus is saying here. And he's predicting too. He's predicting that if you go about your life this way, with God on first, some people are going to be angry. Some people are going to play with your mind. Some people are going to deny you are who you are and insist you remain who you used to be. Yeah. Are you who you used to be? Or are you someone new? Are you a child of God? Or are you a creature of habit? Do you know the right thing to do, the right thing to pursue? Or are you confused and twisted by your own appetites? I had my license for a little over 2 weeks. I'm driving my mother's powder blue Maverick. I got a job. I got a hot girlfriend. I got a future. Not nearly as hot as you, dear. I'd had a long day at work. A very long day at work. The Holloway House. I went from work over to my female friend's house. And I was coming home late at night. Some of you know this story already, but so what? You're going to hear it again. And I'm on top of the world. Mink DeVille is on the stereo. Probably none of you even remember who Mink DeVille was, but he was on the stereo rocking pretty hard, and I'm coming up Oak Mount Road, road I know like the back of my hand. What's that? And all of a sudden, I'm spinning. And all of a sudden, out the passenger side, there's an embankment. I'm not wearing my seatbelt. I'm going too fast. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I don't even have my permanent license yet. And as the car goes in the air, and Paul, when you told me what was going through your mind at your accident, boy, I identified with you. I was thinking, this is not going to end well. And it didn't. When you're in the middle of a ton of rolling metal, and you don't know if you're going to live or die, you know you're going to bounce. I remember my head, neck, and shoulders on the roof of that car. And I remember opening my eyes and seeing the dashboard in front of me, going to sit up and hitting my head on the roof, which had been crushed down. I remember seeing that there was no way I could open the doors. I remember thinking, stupid, 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 stupid. Crawling out of that car. That was a huge mistake, probably the biggest mistake I'd made to that point in my life. I had just totaled my mother's car. I'd had my license for 3 weeks. I walked up to Lucas's house, knocked on the door. Mr. Lucas answered. I said, I just had an accident. I need to call my folks. He said, I know, I saw the lights. Come on in now. Call your folks. You washed the blood off. What? And I cut my hand climbing out of the window, of all things. And it would take stitches. Police came. Sitting in the cop car, this guy thought he was Martin Milner, one Adam 12, man. This was his opportunity to scare the fear of God right into me. I mean, nothing he was going to say was anything compared to that rolling metal, but he shined the car out, the flashlight out of the car at the twisted wreckage there in the cornfield. Then he shined it down on that great big temporary license, about the size of a billboard back then. And I know somewhere on there he was filling in cause of accident, a real loser. And he turns to me and says, son, you're lucky to be alive. I am lucky. I am lucky to be alive. I am lucky it didn't end all right there when I was 17, had never even met this beautiful woman. Didn't even have these kids. Didn't know half of you. And the half I did know had no idea I could preach. I am lucky to be alive. And God is on first. You know, after that day, I'd love to tell you everything changed for me. And I was not your typical 17-year-old kid, but there are people here who knew me. But I did change fundamentally that day. After that, I tended to grab hold of my folks a little more. I tended to care a little bit more about what I did and what I said. I started to look for other friendships. I started, even at 17, to try to be a different person than I had been. I tried to take the fact that I was sucking oxygen seriously. I tried to see that I'd been given another day on the planet. God loved me. And God had plans for me. You know, from that day to this, I still don't feel like I quite fit in this world. I still feel like I'm traveling at different steps, at a different rhythm. And that's okay. And from that day, there are so many times I've had to turn to God and say, no, really, I did learn the lesson, and I'm sorry I screwed up again. From that day, I guess what I really learned is just how human I am. How fragile life is. And that if I don't strap that oxygen mask of God over my mouth first, how useless I become. Jesus came bringing the deepest, greatest, most wonderful peace in the world. But unless you make room for that first in your hearts, you're never going to experience all the blessing. Unless you empty yourself of all the pride, of all the fear, of all the anger, then you're just scratching the surface. Who's on first? Who's on first? My prayer for all of us is that you'll ask yourself that question every day, and that the answer will never vary. Who's on first? God's on first. Amen.